From Jeanette to York, Ridgeway to Williamsport, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, so-called open primaries are a tactic used by the left to block the nomination of conservative candidates in Republican primaries. So says Jim Balboa of the Rhino Removal Project, and he is here to explain. Pennsylvania has become a desirable location for the construction of data centers. Will the electric grid be able to supply the demand? Frank Gamrat and Eric Montardi have an Allegheny Institute report. And President Trump's One Big Beautiful Bill is now law. Emily Green from Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania separates fact from myth on this week's Lincoln Radio Journal commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to Jim Balboa of the Rhino Removal Project in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. A major development this past week in the upcoming 2026 race for governor of Pennsylvania, U.S. Representative Dan Muser, who had been touring the state to test the waters for a run at the Republican gubernatorial nomination, announced that he will not be running for governor, but will instead run for re-election to his seat in Congress. With the GOP in the majority, Muser has become more influential. That leaves two potential candidates. State Treasurer Stacey Garrity is expected to announce her intentions over the coming weeks. She has twice been elected to statewide office, winning last year with the largest number of votes for a statewide candidate in Pennsylvania history. State Senator Doug Mastriano, who was the Republican standard bearer in 2022, is also considering another run. The winner of the GOP primary will face incumbent Governor Josh Shapiro, who as of now is unopposed for his party's nomination. The Pennsylvania state budget is now almost 2 weeks late, and there is no sign that an agreement is imminent. One of the key sticking points appears to be the potential taxing of skill games. Complicating matters, there is division within the ranks of each party, as well as between the parties. Proposals range anywhere from leaving the games untaxed to taxing up to 52% of the profits. The overall spend number is also at issue, with legislative Republicans and Governor Josh Shapiro far apart in their spending proposals. House Republicans, led by State Representative Barbara Gleim of Cumberland County, are trying to force a vote in the lower chamber on the Save Women's Sports Act. The proposal passed the state Senate on a bipartisan 31-18 vote in May. However, Democratic leadership has refused to bring the issue to a floor vote in the House. Republicans are pushing a discharge petition for a vote on the issue. However, Democrats re-referred the legislation to another committee, temporarily sidetracking that effort. The act would prohibit biological males from participating in women's sports. The decision by U.S. Representative Dwight Evans to retire from Congress at the end of his current term has begun to draw competitors. State Representative Chris Rabb says he plans on running for the seat. State Senator and State Democrat Party Chairman Sharif Street has already announced his candidacy. Rabb has successfully challenged Philadelphia's party establishment in the past, setting up a potentially divisive primary. However, the district is heavily Democratic, giving the GOP little chance for a pickup. Speaking of Philadelphia, a strike by AFSCME District Council 33 ended with an agreement that provides for 3% annual raises. That is closer to what Mayor Sherelle Parker offered than the union's demands at the start of negotiations. Trash was piling up across the city. It will now be removed. And 20 years ago, a defining chapter in Pennsylvania political history began to unfold as lawmakers voted themselves a 34% pay raise during a middle-of-the-night session. Public reaction was swift and severe. State Supreme Court Justice Russell Nigro became the only sitting member of the statewide judiciary to date to be denied retention as he was caught up in the political backlash. Dozens of state lawmakers lost their seats in the following election. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. Voters who have chosen to register as an independent or in a minor political party cannot vote in Republican and Democrat primaries. In an effort to blunt conservative influence in the selection of Republican candidates, the left is seeking to change that. For details, we turn to Jim Balboa. He is the Chief Operating Officer of the Rhino Removal Project. Jim, welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. Jim, when we talk about the issue of open primaries, sometimes in the political world that can mean different things. For example, it can mean a party choosing to not endorse in a primary, but it takes on a very different meaning when it comes to actual voter participation. So to set the ground rules here, explain to us what we mean by the term open primary.
It's a very good question because I think it confuses people, and I think you laid it out very well. Open primaries have mainly come around over the last 15 years where in a primary for the Republican Republican Party, for example, by making it open as opposed to closed, Democrats, independents, libertarians, people from any party can vote, which undermines the entire point of being in the Republican Party, because it means that the wishes of the party members is not properly being expressed. And I've compared that with other people when they talk about, you know, recent elections where certain states have encouraged non-citizens to participate in federal elections. It's a similar analogy where what's the point of being an American citizen if anybody from any, you know, any other citizenship or any other country can vote in our election? So it's an extremely undermining process when you allow non-members of a party to vote in your party primary. And that's what the problem is of open primaries.
Does this open the door here, Jim, for those who wish to find a way to have a particular party, be it Republican or Democrat, but usually this is aimed at the Republican Party, to get the party to nominate the weakest rather than the strongest candidate by having an open primary where others can participate?
Yes, that's been the trend that we're seeing. I've been getting involved in this in a number of what we would call deep red states, and where the Democrat Party is more marginalized, the idea that you're going to have a Republican that is not, say, you know, like a traditional patriotic America First MAGA Tea Party type candidate, but somebody who is more established centrist and taking in Democratic issues is what we're winding up with. And, you know, many people like to call them rhinos, Republicans in name only, because they turn out to be people who wind up getting the nomination and then getting elected and not representing conservative Republican values when they're in office. And that's been the net effect.
As you look around the country, the states that do have open primaries, are you seeing that then having a downstream effect on legislation and the legislative process in those states?
Very much so. It's been a serious problem, in particular in many of the, you know, the deep red states. You know, like South Carolina is one that pops into my mind where, you know, you basically got a supermajority of Republicans in the, you know, in the state house. And despite that, you have tremendous amounts of what we would call non-conservative legislation. And you're now seeing a lot of the grassroots groups fight back on it. You know, many of the Democrat liberal issues that you would be horrified that, you know, a Republican supermajority would be taking up has been happening at the local and state level in South Carolina. And you've even had, you know, members of grassroots efforts starting like a local Doge to counter it, right? So just like Elon Musk had Doge at the federal level to counter the, you know, the wasteful, ridiculous, fraudulent spending, you're seeing that in state and local level to combat some of the non-conservative spending that's gone on in, say, a South Carolina where they're choosing all of these liberal issues to spend money on that would not be conservative issues. And they're undermining people at the local level in terms of zoning, in terms of like how different economic programs or packages are put out to builders. So up and down the entire electoral stream, it's been an issue. And in that particular state, they've tried to close the primary, right? So because they have a completely open primary, a closed primary would achieve a lot in a state like that, as an example.
We are talking with Jim Balboa, who is the chief operating officer for the Rhino Removal Project. We're talking about the issue of so-called open primaries, something which various groups here in Pennsylvania, Jim, have been pushing for. Interestingly, largely populated by a coalition of left-wing organizations, so we can see exactly what's at play here. One of the arguments that they advance is, well, if you're a registered independent, you are deprived of the ability to fully participate in the electoral process because you don't have the ability to help choose party nominees. How do we counter an argument like that?
That's a really easy one. Just become a member of the party. That's the whole point of being a party member, is that if you want to be a participant in your party's political process, join the party. If you're not going to join the party and you're an independent, well, then you're telling everybody that you don't want to participate in that process and you don't have the right to do that.
In terms of political parties, correct me if I'm wrong, but political parties are not really part of the official electoral process. Political parties are independent operations, are they not?
Yeah, that is true. The political parties themselves are organizations, and they're covered under your right to assembly, and that right to assembly is in the Constitution. And by undermining the right to assembly and allowing non-members to influence what is happening, that is the crux of the issue. And, it's a very good point. The political party system is not a government entity. These are non-government entities that are captured under the Constitution for freedom of speech and freedom of assembly. And that is being violated when the left wing tries to open up primaries to influence what is going on in the conservative and Republican parties.
You referenced South Carolina a little while ago here, Jim. As you look around the country, where is the momentum here? Is this more toward red states closing primaries or more for states like Pennsylvania that have closed primaries? The left is on the move trying to get open primaries.
Yeah, all of the above. We're seeing states that are red, and I would put Pennsylvania as a red state, where the left is trying to get them to open primaries. And our organization has been hooking up with local groups to stop it, counter it. And in cases where there are open primaries, how do you get them closed again?
As you have explained, the whole drive behind open primaries is to try to dilute the impact of conservative free market Republicans in the Republican Party. You have a group called the Rhino Removal Project. Pretty much describes, I think, what it is you're all about. You've only been up and running for a couple of months here. But Jim, what is the Rhino Removal Project? And tell us a little bit about what you're doing.
Well, we were founded off of X. And so we have a very large social media presence that has brought us together. And we've been fortunate enough to have a very big reach nationally on X, and now that has been transferring itself into many, many of the states. So we've been creating state chapters at the local level for all the states that we've been building our organization around. So we're active now in 11 states, and if you go to our website, rhinoremovalproject.org, you will see links to each state chapter, and we are actively recruiting people in every state to set up a Rhino Removal Project chapter, and we want to stop that.
Certainly. Primaries are critical for electing conservatives to congressional and legislative seats. We have been talking with Jim Balboa, who is Chief Operating Officer of the Rhino Removal Project. Jim, thank you for taking time to be with us.
You're welcome, sir.
A number of new data centers are going to be built in Pennsylvania, putting new demand on the state's electric grid. Can it handle the load? Frank Gamrat and Eric Montardi have the answer on this Allegheny Institute report.
Hello, and welcome to the Allegheny Institute report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal. I'm Eric Montardi. Joining me today is the Executive Director of the Allegheny Institute, Frank Gamrat. In a recent policy brief, you posed this question: can Pennsylvania's energy supply keep up with demand? What are the issues that are playing out across the state that provide an answer?
Well, you know, electricity is one of those things that we're just kind of blind to or used to. You walk into a room, you flip a switch, and everything comes on. But earlier this year, and I mean earlier as in like June, May, a lot of electricity companies were granted rate increases by the Pennsylvania Utility Commission. And the key reason is that the supply of electricity generation is not keeping up with the demand for electricity. And as a result, electric companies are struggling to keep pace, and they asked for and were granted a rate hike. Now, this is going to mean a lot coming into summer air conditioning season, but is it just confined to household appliances? I mean, let's face it, the Biden administration put a push on for electric stoves or gas stoves. Electric cars are in more driveways than ever before. Tools, whether they're saws or drills or whatnot, are electric. Lawnmowers, electric. We're putting a tremendous amount of pressure on the electricity grid. But the one thing that no one has noticed is the demand for electricity by our computer systems, by specifically the artificial intelligence folks and data centers specifically.
Frank, so what are data centers? What impact might they have on energy demand?
Data center, simply put, is a bank of mainframe computers. So, you know, don't think about your laptop or your desktop at home. Think of a mainframe that's about the size of your refrigerator. And so what they do is they put a whole bunch of these processors in a building. It's climate controlled, it's safety, it has to have backup electricity. And what it does is every time you make an inquiry on your computer via your search engine, you ask it a question, you type in a question, it spits out an answer. All that gets processed through these data centers. But where things have taken that next step is through artificial intelligence, AI. Think of your phone. If you have an iPhone, it's Siri. If you have Amazon at home, it's Alexa. Or you look at the box or the ball or whatever device you have and say, you know, Siri, what's the weather today? And Siri gives you an answer. That's artificial intelligence, and that takes up a significant amount of energy than does typing in a Google search, what's the weather today? And so in Pennsylvania, we're starting to push for more data centers to be open and to enter our economy and provide the jobs that it's promising. But at the same time, do we have the electrical infrastructure to handle all of this?
So that leads to this question. Why might PA be poised for growth in this industry, and what might hold Pennsylvania back?
Well, again, in this industry, you know, I mentioned the AI, and AI requires about 10 times the power to run and answer that what's the weather like question than it does to type it into Google. So it's a tremendous amount of electricity being used. So the challenges for Pennsylvania is our infrastructure able to keep up? Now, there's a group out there called the Electric Power Research Institute, and they released a white paper in 2024, and they said that right now across the country, data centers consume about 4% of electricity usage across the country. And in Pennsylvania, it's a little less than that, but not by much, like 3-point-something%. This is expected to grow. Now, here's the catch. In Pennsylvania, we've decommissioned a lot of coal power plants. And yes, I know it's happened all across the country, but recently on our side of the state in the West, we had a power plant be demolished in Springdale, Allegheny County. And we had another one, which had been a very large coal power plant in Homer City, Indiana County. And so, you know, as these coal plants are being decommissioned, new ones have not been rebuilt. Now, the good news is what poises us to move forward and be a player in this industry is the natural gas that sits under our feet. With the Marcellus and Utica shales, we're sitting on a lot of natural gas. So, for example, in Homer City, there is a proposal to build a power plant there that will specifically feed a data center. It'll be 4.5 gigawatts of power generated from this natural gas-fired power plant. In perspective, currently the largest largest power plant in Pennsylvania produces about 1 gigawatt of power. And so, you know, you're looking at this need for this electricity. In the Harrisburg area, Microsoft just entered an agreement with Constellation Energy to purchase energy from a rebooted Three Mile Island Unit 1, which had been shuttered since 2019. You know, Microsoft has been building these types of power plants all over the country, including a $1 billion investment in Wyoming. So Pennsylvania could be poised to really be a player in this industry, assuming that we can allow natural gas power plants to be built and put in line. Now, here's the problem. It doesn't take them long to build a data center, but it takes them a long time to build a power plant and to get it hooked up to the system or even updating of the infrastructure that we currently have. So we're facing a pretty monumental task of getting caught up with this demand. You know, data centers are one of the fastest growing industries in the country, and that Electric Research Institute had said that Pennsylvania is the 10th largest data center in the country currently. We're ahead of New York and New Jersey, and so we're really well positioned. We're in between large metro areas like New York and D.C., plus Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, and we have a great abundance of talent with the universities all across the states, the Carnegie Mellons or Penns or Temples or what have you, and so we certainly have the talent. Now, what could slow us down, of course, is the regulatory environment. This push for green energy, it's just not going to cut it if we want to be able to compete in the race for data centers. We're going to have to use a lot of energy sources. Like even the Post-Gazette made the admission that fossil fuel power plants are going to be needed to help us with the data center infrastructure if we want to be a player in this industry. Currently, they're saying about data centers in Pennsylvania consume about 3.1% of our electricity. EPRI put together some scenarios where it could be as low as 3.78 by the year 2030. It could be as high as 7.5% by the year 2030. So if Pennsylvania wants to be a player, they're going to have to meet this demand, which currently they can't do. Data centers are one of the fastest growing industries in the world. With all of the other options that we have for electricity generation, fossil fuels is going to have to play a big role. And Pennsylvania policymakers really need to get out of the way and let this thing develop naturally.
Interesting stuff, Frank. Thank you very much. We always tell our listeners to visit our website, www.alleghenyinstitute.org, to read this brief and look at our archives as well. For Frank Gamrat, this is Eric Montardi, and this has been the Allegheny Institute Report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal.
A lot of disinformation is circulating about the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. Emily Green from Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania separates myth from reality on this Lincoln Radio Journal commentary.
On July 4th, as folks gathered to celebrate the permanency of their tax cuts, President Trump signed the One Big Beautiful Bill into One Big Prosperous Law. This legislation passed along near partisan lines, where Pennsylvania's own Congressman Brian Fitzpatrick was one of the two lone nay votes in the House, made permanent the tax cuts that we have enjoyed since President Trump's TCJA was signed into law during his first term in 2017. This victory was no easy feat. In fact, the efforts of Americans for Prosperity's taxpayer activists required hundreds of thousands of calls made into target districts, nearly 500,000 doors knocked across the country, and hundreds of events, town halls, and roundtables hosted to educate concerned citizens about the crucial need to get this bill signed into law, and with expediency. Through Americans for Prosperity's full court press campaign, Protect Prosperity, our activists got to work to safeguard their hard-earned dollars. However, as with all things in Washington, leftist messaging has made many question the efficacy of President Trump's One Big Beautiful Bill Act. To that we say, the truth is in the legislation. And today, AFP is breaking it down for you. Myth number one, One Big Beautiful Bill Act only benefits the wealthy. Here's the facts. The 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act helped all Americans, not just a fortunate few. It lowered taxes across every income level and simplified filing by doubling the standard deduction and adjusting it annually for inflation. That saved Americans not just money, but time and stress during tax season. If the cuts had expired, 6 in 10 Americans would have paid more, some even thousands more. A single parent with 3 kids making $55,000, for instance, would owe $1,889 more per year. The Trump tax cuts didn't just help individuals, they fueled economic growth. Businesses reinvested, created jobs, and increased salaries. unemployment hit record lows, and inflation stayed in check. Myth number two, the bill will cut Medicaid for Pennsylvanians. Fact, the reforms to Medicaid included in the One Big Beautiful Bill aren't about cuts. They're focused on fixing a broken system to better serve the people who need it most. Medicaid is riddled with waste, fraud, and abuse. It is failing the vulnerable populations it is supposed to protect, including the poor, disabled, and pregnant women. Patients face long waits, they can't find doctors who accept Medicaid, and they often receive substandard care. Opponents call any reform a cut, quote-unquote, but that's wrong. Medicaid has expanded far beyond its original mission, straining resources and leaving vulnerable people behind. The reconciliation bill reforms Medicaid to improve outcomes, protect access to quality care, and restore the program's integrity. And finally, myth number three, this bill explodes the deficit. Here's the fact. Tax cuts have not driven budget deficits. Out-of-control spending has. Federal spending has more than tripled since 2001, the last time the federal budget was balanced, jumping from under $2 trillion to nearly $7 trillion last year. Meanwhile, interest payments on our $36 trillion debt are now among the government's biggest expenses. The tax cuts sparked a massive economic boom in 2017. This bill doesn't just extend those tax cuts to avoid the largest tax hike in American history. It also included $1.79 trillion in spending cuts, and the House has already approved another $9.4 billion in rescissions. Passing the One Big Beautiful Bill was only the start. Now we switch gears to making sure that all Americans understand that Congress got to work to protect their hard-earned money. Join us in the fight to give a voice to the hardworking taxpayers across the Commonwealth and country. Head to protectprosperity.com to equip yourself with the facts and join us as we preach the good news. Congress just prevented the largest tax hike on the American people. This is Emily Green, State Director with Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 30 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WIYQ AM and FM in Saxonburg, WMSS FM in Middletown, along with WERG FM at Gannon University in Erie, Pennsylvania. Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.
Thank you.